Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear friends, it's late December 2012, and Camille and I are beginning to be settled in our new home in Louisville, Kentucky. All is well, alhamdulillah. We send you the greetings of our hearts as we begin a new cycle of our spiritual journey. This video presentation is a new way of reaching out to friends far and wide. I'm a little self-conscious, but let's see how it goes. I would like to share with you some thoughts on a recently translated passage from the Masnavi entitled Collectedness and the Mantle of Ecstasy. You can find this selection at sufism.org/articles/collectedness. In this selection from Book 6, we begin with a story of a warrior and his collectedness in battle, and we end with the ecstasy of a mystic. Like so many passages from the Masnavi, we have both a very exalted message, one we might even question could apply to us, but we also have some very down-to-earth and practical teachings. Let's begin with some reflections on collectedness, a subject that was explored at length in the chapter on the fragmented self in our book, Living Presence. The experience of our own identity, or I-ness, is a source of wonder from the moment we become aware of it in childhood and through the whole of our life. Each I, each individual self, seems unique and has its own personal history. Perhaps the greatest variable in human nature is the characteristic quality of this feeling of I. For some, this feeling is one of alienation and anxiety. For others, it's communion with life. For some, the feeling is one of self-blame. For others, it may be deep well-being. For some, the I is a prison bounded by incessant thoughts and habitual reactions. For others, it's an inexhaustible hidden treasure. For most of us, if we look honestly at our inner life, we see how dispersed we are. We're in parts, and yet we wish to be whole. We're distracted, and yet we wish to concentrate. We're scattered, and yet we wish to be collected. We're scattered to the extent that we yield to every impulse that arises in us when we give our I to every state. We say, my likes or dislikes, my feelings, my pain, and we reduce that I to the proportions of our personal states. The I becomes weak and absorbed in all these things. At one time it's absorbed in a compulsive unconscious act, at another in a vague anxiety. From one moment to another it moves through likes and dislikes, through various motives and preoccupations. At one moment, its attention is occupied with what's in front of it, and in the next, it enters a daydream. Some sense of I is identified with each of these events, but there's no coherent presence. We're fragmented when we wander from our own center, when our attention is merely reacting to outer events, or when it's being dominated by something. It loses contact with its own source. Attention is a sacred faculty. But when attention is drawn to whatever pulls the strongest, it has no force of its own. It is passive. If our attention is not connected to our soul, we're not living a fully human life. A human is not fully a human being when living as a mere reaction to outer events. On the spiritual path, we're trained to take responsibility for our attention, We develop a capacity for attention through zikr and meditation, through ritual prayer, and eventually through being more fully present in our daily lives. However, this is just the beginning. Collectedness, when bestowed from the source of life, is something more, something miraculous. In Book 6 of the Mathnawi, beginning with lines 3034, Rumi gives us a portrait of a great warrior, Jafar, saying, "He sits in the saddle, his nerve unshaken, as if all the east and west were at his side. God's action has bestowed on him such collectedness that he was confronting a whole army single-handedly. When my eye beheld the face of that emperor, quantity, numbers, became nothing in my sight." Now this is a divinely bestowed collectedness. Warriors, athletes, and mystics all seek a mysterious collectedness. Spiritual attainment is a process of transformation of the I from an unconscious, reactive, and dispersed identity into a more gathered, coherent, collected, yet selfless identity. Jafar, attacking the fortress, causes its walls to tremble like mercury. The vizier of the enemy king says, "Don't underestimate this man's singleness." Some spiritual power had bestowed upon him a collectedness of spirit from an infinite source. No doubt Jafar had prepared himself to receive what he received, but its source was beyond himself. As the saying goes, no one attains illumination by his own effort, and yet no one who has not made the effort will receive this illumination. The source is not of the material world, but the material world, every molecule of it, trembles before it. This power is a quality, not a quantity. In a humorous analogy, Rumi contrasts this state of collectedness with the state of human fragmentation. He uses a cat and mouse analogy. A mouse, by its very nature, does not possess the collectedness of a cat. No quantity of mice will overcome the collectedness of the cat. Theoretically, if the mice were to form an alliance with their greater numbers, they could easily overcome the cat. But it's not in the nature of mice, individually or collectively, to unite in this way. Rumi learned this lesson from his beloved mentor Shams of Tabriz, who once said to him, "This religion has its rats, but this religion, thanks be to God, also has its cats." Therefore, no quantity of mice can challenge the quality of a cat, especially if that cat has become a lion, just as no amount of sheep will ever frighten the butcher. And just as the source of life bestows collectedness on the lion or beauty in the face of a young girl, the human being is potentially the recipient of an unconditioned light. Referring to the well-known light verse in the Quran, Rumi suggests that the body is the niche and the heart is the crystal glass that enfolds the unconditioned light of the divine. The light which a human being can potentially embody could dazzle all of existence, and yet the carriers of such light, the masters, saints, and prophets, are in reality veiled. Moses' light had to be covered by a humble felt cloak, or it would have overwhelmed his people. The cloak, or khirka, has long been a symbol in Sufism for the mantle of spiritual authority, which is also a mantle of divine protection. The practice of the master bestowing a cloak on the disciple was already well established by the time of Rumi and Shams. For Shams said, I received a khirqa from Muhammad, but it was not a physical khirqa. It was the invisible khirqa of companionship. Apart from the literal cloak or mantle, this human body itself is a mantle for the light of spirit. The mantle absorbs and preserves the ecstatic light of the mystic, counteracting the entropy of material existence and making his or her very physicality a source of radiant blessing. Though the body is considered in many spiritual traditions to be an obstacle to spiritual attainment, in Rumi's teaching, the body itself becomes incandescent with spirit. As he expresses it, the fire is hidden or latent within the fuel, because the fuel is destined to burn. Every log, though solid and inert, contains fire in its essence. Let's keep in mind that we're still talking about collectedness, a collectedness that begins with an integrated self, but goes through a process of transformation leading to a connection to the deepest source of life. In the same passage, Rumi tells us, "The seal of the prophets has related the saying of the everlasting and eternal Lord. I am not contained in the heavens or in the void, or in the exalted intelligences and souls, but I am contained as a guest in a faithful heart, without qualification or definition or description, so that through the medium of that heart, everything above and below may win from me sovereignties and fortune. Without such a mirror, neither earth nor time could bear the vision of my beauty." That heart is the expansive mirror that reflects the attributes of the divine into this earthly realm. Intellectual discussions of the mirror have only a limited value. The point is to face the mirror in a collected state and be transformed by it. The journey that began with individual collectedness, moves towards this miraculous, radiant collectedness. The miraculous courage and strength of Jafar, the ecstasy of the prophet Moses, may seem like remote possibilities. But each of us has the unconditioned light within our being. Otherwise, we would not exist. Every time we gather our attention, we are preparing ourselves to have the capacity to face the expansive mirror. Every time we practice remembrance or contemplation, we are before the infinite mirror. The unconditioned light is not remote or unaware of our need. In fact, it's yearning to be recognized and to be kindled in the wood of this body. As this collectedness matures, the soul's fire becomes more and more a fire of servanthood, devotion, courage, generosity, love, and ecstasy. Take this khirqa, your body, and make it radiant. It's time.